From KXCI in Tucson, you are listening to the Captain's Log Project. I'm Amy A. Our mission is to connect with our community during this time of social distancing. Captain's Log, August 8th, 2021, Amy A. The pandemic is still real. A year and a half into it, and now there are spikes in cases again due to variants of COVID-19. So much so that the freedom I felt after vaccination is now back to wariness. I was personally going unmasked more and more, and now I'm more cautious. TUSD schools are now requiring all kids to wear masks at school, and this was a relief to me as a parent, even though my teenager is vaccinated. I wonder about when my son grows up and his memories of high school during the COVID era. I never thought wearing a mask would be a cultural norm here in the U.S., but it is now. That said, I feel free to move about the world in new ways, a far cry from 2020 and staying at home day after day. Here at the Captain's Log, I've begun going out into our communities to capture stories and visit with people. It's nice to see you again. I'm witnessing that the world has changed. We changed ways of doing business, ways of working, how we relate to each other. I'm sure cultural studies will be done on this era describing and defining this. For now, we are living it real time. Recently, I visited with Tucsonan Michael Dixon, who left his profession as a teacher many years ago to pursue a most interesting path. Michael works with very old record cutting machines called lathe cutters to cut records one by one for his clients all over the world. While the recording and music industries are rapidly advancing in technology and streamlining ways of production, Michael is a champion of analog. Join me on this fascinating tour with Michael and his unique lathe cuts operation.
This is what we call the lathe cave, because the machines that we use are called record lathes. We cut records in real time on four different machines, so we get four at a time. And these machines were made in the 1940s. They were all used in radio stations back before magnetic tape as the actual recording medium. And in the 1950s, when magnetic tape came in and you were able to reuse the material as opposed to just having to throw it away after one day's use, you would, or the radio stations put these into the basement, and they sat there until the 60s when somebody said, clean those things out. And then the old timers took them home and said, no, I love those machines. Let me take it. So they would take it home. Then they'd put it in their basement and it would sit there until somebody came to clean out that basement, and hopefully they find their way to me.
Mm-hmm.
Michael's basement operation is a room filled with tools, boxes of shipping materials, several large trash cans, a stereo, a very small portable record player, stacks of uncut records, and along one wall is a row of four lathe cutting machines. They look a lot like four old record players, but the turntables are mounted on top of wooden boxes. The lathe cutters look very similar to a record player that you might have in your house, except that the arms that hold the needles have a small metal box attached that is an essential part of the cutting process. And instead of a record needle, there is a gem. Michael explains how it works.
So it's digital to analog as opposed to analog to digital. But we take our audio from the iPad, but it could be a laptop, it could be a cassette Walkman, it could be a microphone. It runs into the mixer. The mixer runs into an equalizer where we can sweeten the frequencies, make it sound better, boost certain things. Then it runs into the amplifier. The amplifier runs into this little box on the front here, which is called a cutter head. And the cutter head is just a little speaker. But instead of having a big paper cone that pushes the sound waves out through the air, it focuses those sound waves down to the tip of a little tiny needle that is made from an aluminum shank with a sapphire tip. And that sapphire is vibrating in real time with the music. You can hear it coming off of the cutter head.
Wait, sapphire like the gem?
Right, yeah, like okay. The precious gem.
Okay.
And it... I don't know why it works the best, but it does.
Versus what? Like diamond or something?
Diamond or any other.
Okay.
We diamond does work well, but it's much more expensive. Mm-hmm. So we stick to sapphires.
Okay.
And so the sapphire is vibrating in real time along with the music and cutting the sound wave into the face of the disc. So if you look at SoundCloud or, you know, any kind of computer sound wave, hey, Chris.
This one,
just
doing it again.
It was getting locked.
Michael was talking to Chris Levesque, who is in the basement running the lathe cutters, which essentially means he's ripping off a protective cover to the vinyl. That's the sound you might hear in the background occasionally. Putting them on the turntables and placing the gem cutter arm on all four records and then playing the song over and over, watching each operation for quality control. Michael just noticed something was off on one of the cutters, and now it needs to be checked.
Called a Crosley turntable. They're the cheapest, lowest end turntables you can possibly buy. They don't generally sound very good, but because a lot of people have them, they're one of the most popular turntables for new record collectors. We want to make sure that all of our records will play on one. Well, what was happening was the machine was getting hung up, and it was not the needle was not moving forward, because the groove has to be one long continuous groove from the start to the finish.
Okay.
But at some point, the needle stopped moving forward, so it just started locking in on itself. It went around and around in the same groove.
Yeah.
And so because of that, we can't use this disc. And these machines are 85 years old, so they're very... what do you say? Temperamental.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to babysit them. You have to watch them. You have to adjust. You have to keep them well adjusted and sort of test. And there are definitely rejects that is just part of the game.
Custom lathe cutting is a process that requires vigilance, patience, and time. Much like all artistic endeavors, the end product is a result of the time and care you put into it. The basement, or lathe cave as Michael calls it, has the feel of a workshop. Every good workshop has its own atmosphere created by the things that inspire, remind, and spark the imagination. I started looking around the basement beyond the tools needed to do the job, which initially attracted my attention.
Walk me through all of this equipment that you have in the lathe cave. You have shelves of what?
Shelves of tools, fuses, various electronics, things that we need to do adjustments with.
A Bugs Bunny stuffed animal.
Yeah, we have all kinds of weird little tchotchkes and knickknacks around just for giggles.
And is that Prince there in pink? There's a, or who is that?
That's Jesse Johnson. Jesse Johnson really wanted to be Prince.
Yeah, she recorded with Prince.
And was probably friends with Prince. Definitely got style tips from Prince.
That record was kind of Paisley Park.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
But you know, he's looking good, so we have him up there as a
he is looking good. As inspiration. I agree. Pink looks good on him.
Mm-hmm.
You are listening to the Captain's Log Project from KXCI in Tucson. I'm your host, Amy A. You just heard the song Be Your Man by artist Jesse Johnson, whose album cover hangs on the wall of Michael Dixon's record cutting co-op here in Tucson. Michael anchors his base of operations in Tucson, which he calls the unlikely and unofficial record lathe capital of the world. Out of this workshop, he operates several businesses, including the on-site custom lathe cutting, a mobile operation where he custom lathe cuts all over the world, and a record label named Pioptic that has released records from artists such as Granddaddy, The Flaming Lips, Jeffrey Lewis, and Tucson's own Golden Boots. He also repairs old machines, trains others how to repair and operate them. And if that wasn't enough, Michael hasn't let go of his inner teacher. Because he does presentations for libraries and schools, chronicling the history and science of recorded sound. His passion for the subject and depth of knowledge is fun and inspiring. And during my visit with him, it wasn't long before Michael's inner teacher comes out.
If you're in Tucson in 1941, you aren't going to necessarily pay somebody to research and broadcast international and national news. You get it from the Associated Press and Edward R. Murrow. And so that would come piped in over the phone lines, but that's being broadcast at 5 o'clock in New York when it's 2 or 3 o'clock in Tucson, depending on the time of the year. And so you would have to record it. So they would record it on two turntables. They would have one that was cutting and then one that was ready to go as soon as, you know, it ran out of disk space. I've made records out of chocolate, old laser discs, CDs that'll play in your turntable and your CD player, plastic picnic plates. I even made a drum cymbal record for the drummer from the Melvins. They all require special materials and needles, but they're all done on these machines. Yeah, so here's an example of one of the drum cymbals. But it also plays on your turntable. This is a reject, so it doesn't sound all that good, but these did work. We did sell a lot of them, and they're very expensive on eBay and Discogs these days. Here is an X-ray, playable X-ray. These have a pretty interesting history. Back during the Cold War, Western music was not allowed, the Beatles, Rolling Stones, jazz, whatever, behind the Iron Curtain. So they would, the only material that they could get to cut their bootlegs were old X-rays from hospitals. So somebody would smuggle in a Miles Davis record, and then somebody that had one of these machines would use X-rays to cut the audio into the disc.
We are now standing in front of a wall where records of all shapes, sizes, and colors are displayed. Michael hangs these records up with tacks through the center hole. He also is super excited about describing them.
These were silkscreened picture discs that we did for Justin Timberlake. We got hired to work his record release party and his Super Bowl party when he was the Super Bowl guest. This one is called Marble Painting. It's you take a bucket of water and you pour acrylic paint on the top, and you drop the disc into it, and as soon as the disc pulls the paint down into the water causes it to set.
And this is basically done one at a time.
Right.
Like, literally with love and care, one at a time.
Oh, yeah. Everything is done in real time, one at a time.
What's this groovy thing here?
This is called an animator record. It's a phenokistoscope record, which is the very early moving image technology. These are done by an artist named Drew Tetz for a band that I work with called Space Face. And if you put them on your turntable and look at them through your phone, the frame rate of the phone camera actually animates the face of the disc. By doing such limited runs, and by doing them one at a time by hand, you're able to really customize the art. This was done for Hal Gelb from here in town, Giant Sand. It's a really early recording of his daughter Patsy singing songs to him.
I wish I could include Michael's description of all the records on that wall, but trust me, there are many, and they all have a story. I wanted to know how Michael was affected by the pandemic, and like many, he had to quickly adapt to meet the times. Here is Michael describing that process.
2020 was looking really good for me in January. I have a business called Mobile Vinyl Recorders, where we go out to events and festivals and cut records live on site. And we had so many events in April and early May, we were almost not sure we were going to be able to do them all. In 6 weeks, we had events in Vancouver, LA, 4 days in Dallas, three different events in Nashville, Atlanta, and I was supposed to go to Russia to install some equipment. And then, of course,
poof.
Yeah, it's all gone. And so, well, I think like everybody, not the first week, you're like, oh, this is just going to be a month, and then it's going to open back up. And then once you realize it's not, then things get kind of dire. Early on in the pandemic, a lot of bands were doing live streams to raise money. And I feel like a lot of fans were really stepping up and supporting the artists that they really liked. So for the first few months, we were doing a lot of records for bands off of their live stream. We were able to sort of partner with these bands and give them a way to make a little bit of money on that and not have to invest anything. Mm-hmm. They already had the sale before they ever committed to making them, and we were able to turn them out pretty quick. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did during the beginning. And then as it went along, a lot of people were losing their jobs or, you know, stuck at home, and they're like, what can I do to work from home? I've always wanted to cut records. So they were buying equipment for me. And then I also had people that had these machines that they never used that were like, I need to get rid of this and get some cash. So I was buying a lot of them as well. 2020 from a professional standpoint was actually pretty good. I also wasn't able to blow all my money traveling, which is what I usually do. You know, going to London just to do a podcast because it's tax deductible and it's a trip to London.
I had so many questions for Michael, many of which I couldn't include here on the show. However, one question I couldn't leave out was, how did Michael go from being a school teacher to a custom record maker? Was there a defining moment? Yes, in fact, there was.
Yeah, I had been doing the record cutting thing for years. I was obsessed with the artistic possibilities of records and also the equipment. And then as vinyl became more and more popular, I got a call from Converse. And they said, hey, we saw this article about you doing a vinyl pop-up at the University of Washington's Henry Art Gallery. And we've got a second level headliner for Coachella that we're doing a VIP party for. Would you be able to come down and cut dub plates, which is what they called one-off records? And I was like, sure. I called in sick from school, told them I had the flu. We flew down to Palm Springs, cut records for 3 days for Converse at this kind of bougie VIP party. And Converse loved it. This was in April, early May. I was about to have to sign a contract for my next year of teaching. And Converse said, well, we want to take you to Singapore and Brazil and China. And at that point I had to either sign my contract and stay in my steady job, which I loved, by the way. I loved teaching. Or kind of step out into the unknown and try to do this for a living. I mean, my whole life is a weird little niche that nobody else wanted to do. Over the last decade, I've managed to just do only what I want all the time. And I can turn down anything that I don't want to do, and I can stay busy enough with the things that I do. And so I've been able to ride my interests and make a meager living off of it.
From KXCI in Tucson, you've been listening to the Captain's Log Project. I'm your host, Amy A. Today, we visited with Michael Dixon at his custom lathe cutting co-op here in Tucson. You can check out all of Michael's work by going to lathecuts.com or just go to our webpage at www.kxci.org/programs and click on the Captain's Log Project. And I'll have all the details there as well. I'll see you next week with another adventure, and until then, live long and prosper.